Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of How to Be Sound after a long hiatus where I have moved country, moved home, worn a lot of masks. It's been a whole trip, hasn't it? Thank you all for hanging around. This episode of How to Be Sound features one of my favourite chats, actually, with a very interesting and smart and talented woman, Charlotte Christensen, who you will hear chatting about her work and her life and her upcoming work, and I will have all the links in the show notes to follow and support her and buy her work, and I highly recommend that you do. If you don't already, you might consider supporting me on Patreon. That's on patreon.com/RosemaryMcCabe. It helps pay for the production of this podcast and also helps support the other work that I'm doing in my writing online and off. And now here is the conversation. Today's guest is Charlotte Christensen, an illustrator, designer and author based in Dublin, and also the woman whose work recently appeared on the cover of the Irish Times magazine on an issue dedicated to Black Irish lives, something that has come up in Charlotte's work a lot. Charlotte, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you, Rosemary, for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. Tell me a bit about yourself. For starters, how did you end up in Dublin, of all places?
It's quite a long story. I wasn't always in Dublin, actually. I was in Belfast before. Actually, no, let's start from the beginning. It's very confusing. I came to Belfast when I was 15 with my family, and then they moved up to Dublin. No, down to Dublin at the time.
Dubliners do like to say up, though. Move up to Dublin.
Yeah, I know. It's so confusing because you're up in Belfast and you're going down. Yeah. So I always get those things confused. So they moved to Dublin then, and then I followed after I was done with my college there. So I was doing a diploma in art and design. And when I ended up in Dublin, I was here about 3 years, and then I went to London to do a degree, and I was kind of in a long distance relationship, so I was sort of flying back and forward between Dublin and London, and I've now been back in Dublin for the last, I think, 5 years now, so yeah, it's kind of a little bit all over the place.
Your accent definitely isn't Belfast or Dublin, so where is your family from originally?
I'm originally from Denmark, so yeah, a little tiny town in Denmark. About like an hour away from Copenhagen.
Oh, wow.
Haven't lived there since I was 15, though. So my accent's kind of, it's got a little bit of everything in it, but there's still quite a Danish accent in there, too.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely hear the Dublin occasionally, but you can definitely hear the kind of Nordic influence as well. Denmark is always getting touted as the happiest country in the world to live in. Have you ever been tempted to go back?
I think only really when I just moved, you know, because you're 15 and you're going to a really different place and you're leaving all your friends behind. And it's very hard to kind of make friends again, especially as a teenager in a class where everyone already knows each other. So I'd say the first year was very tough and I definitely wanted to go back. But then you kind of adapt very quick as a child too, you know. Honestly, now it's been exactly 15 years since I left. I couldn't imagine myself going back now. It's just been too long.
Yeah. And like, do you go back for holidays, vacations at all? Or do you just do the same holidays and vacations that Irish people do? You know what I mean?
I do, because my family actually moved back to Denmark.
Oh, wow.
My sister moved back, I think, in 2011. And then the rest of my family moved back in like 2012. So I've sort of been going back like twice a year to see them. That's been a bit hard, obviously, not having them here. It's just me and my partner. But at the same time, it's something you kind of get used to it. It's strange. You sort of learn to live like away, having like a distant kind of, and maybe your relationship is even better with your family when you don't see them all the time.
Yeah, I used to actually say that a lot, especially with my sister. She lived in the States. Well, I now live in the States too, but she's lived here for, I think, maybe 10 years. And I think our relationship really improved when we had a little bit of distance between us, although we were a bit younger as well when it first happened.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. Have you been in the States for a long time now?
Oh, well, I just arrived here on March 14th, so in the middle of COVID. So I've basically arrived at the worst possible time for anything.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's That's a bit unlucky, but I hope you're okay. I hope everything's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was going to be an interesting time because it's an election year, but now it's been kind of triply interesting because of all this. Tell me about when you did your diploma in art and design, what were you hoping to do from there? Like, did you think you would go into illustration or did you have any ideas?
Actually, it was all a bit, you know, up in the air. Like, at the time, I didn't even see myself going and getting a degree. I know all my friends were sort of like, oh yeah, I'm doing graphic design, I'm doing photography. And I was just, at the time, I was really, really interested in like anime and manga, and all I wanted to be do was like comics. And I initially actually applied for university that was like years back. It was before I went to uni, and it was kind of like a sequential art degree, and I got accepted, but the course got dropped, so I ended up not going.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was all a little bit funny. I was still living in Belfast when that happened, so I decided, okay, I'm moving to Dublin and I'll see what I'll do with my life. And I spent a year, like, not doing anything, really. I was kind of, like, a bit lost and confused about where to go. And then my mom finally kicked me in the ass and said, like, you need to get a job. So I was like, okay. So I worked for a few years. And then I sort of sorted myself out and realized I would actually like to do illustration. I think it was good. I'm happy I went to uni at a later age because I kind of had time to think about what I want to do. And I felt like, yeah, doing a sequential art kind of course might have been too restrictive, and I wouldn't have learned about other stuff that I end up actually enjoying. So yeah, that's sort of what happened.
And what were you working at during those years that you kind of obeyed your mom and knuckled down?
I was something completely different. I was in IT.
Oh, wow.
I worked in customer support, and I was doing like a Danish support. So I was working with Danish clients, and it was kind of how I got the job, is because I spoke the language. So I was like, okay, I will do this job for a bit, save some money up, which was also good, especially going to London and not having any savings would have been crazy. So it was actually, it kind of worked out in the end.
And how did you find studying in London versus studying in Belfast? Did you find there was a big difference, or did you like it, or did you hate it?
It was definitely different because Belfast is so tiny, you know, it's smaller than Dublin. Actually, Dublin felt like a giant city when I moved here. And then London was a massive step up, you know. It's like living in a little country. Every little part of London is like a little town on its own. So it was very overwhelming. It was also hard because I was in a long-distance relationship. So, you know, we were separated for quite some time and we tried to sort of see each other twice a month. So that was tough. But I quickly sort of found my feet there. I have some great friends in London and absolutely end up enjoying my time a lot. I really miss it at times. Just little corners of London that I used to go to a lot, like Brick Lane. It's just very arty and there's all these really cool galleries and shops. And Camden as well. There's just places that I absolutely miss.
Yeah, I mean, I think from a cultural point of view, London is so great because it's just got such a diversity of style and, you know, so many different things to do, in a way that, like, I don't like the rhetoric that says things like there's nothing to do in Dublin except drink, but sometimes when I was in Dublin I did feel that, you know what I mean, that you're like, it's because it's small. And you're like, there's like, London just feels geographically so much bigger than Dublin, even though it's not really that much bigger, it's just so much denser.
Oh no, it's absolutely, like, it's got its good sides and bad sides. On one hand, you know, you've so much to pick from. But then there's also the question of money and time. Mm-hmm. It takes so long getting around London. So, like, maybe there's like 10 different gallery shows you want to go to, but you have to pick one. And so in a sense, like, having so much choice can be really overwhelming. And I kind
of
maybe like that Dublin's so down to earth and there's like less to pick from, and it's, you know, let's hang out at the canal, you know.
Yeah.
Just want to do some very down-to-earth stuff.
How have you found working as an artist in Dublin? Because I know that's one of the things that often gets brought up, that Ireland isn't great for supporting the arts, isn't great for supporting illustrators. How have you found it?
I've definitely found it tricky. Like, I would say I haven't gotten a lot of work from Ireland. Most of my work has been from the States.
Oh, wow.
And that could obviously, there's obviously different reasons for that. I know that my style is quite something that they look for there. But I also think the topic that I tend to kind of represent, it's not really something that's talked a lot about in Ireland. Even though there is a black community, it's obviously much smaller. And I think there's just clients don't really think about those kind of issues here as much. So I definitely felt like there's been less work here for me. But I also think, yeah, in terms of support, I know that they regionally recently brought in like the job seekers allowance, but it's like for like freelancers, it's for like artists, it's like an artist scheme, but it's very messy. And last year I was struggling a bit financially because I was working on my current book. I took sort of a deal that wasn't really the best deal, but I really wanted to do it because it was a creator-owned story and I had complete control over it, which was amazing. But it didn't mean either, you know, taking loads of jobs on and not being able to stay on top of my deadlines or actually, you know, seek out some help. And I found it was very, very difficult getting that support, even though it was there. Mm. Everyone was kind of like sending you to a different department. No one wanted to tell you what you needed to do, what documents they needed. So I ended up just giving up on it. So that wasn't great. That wasn't a great experience. Yeah. I ended up getting a part-time job, actually. I was just like, I'm done.
Yeah, it's really tough. And I think you read about and you see a lot of people going, oh, you know, I got help from this department or I, you know, applied for this grant. But I feel like almost as if the creative community in Ireland is divided in two, people who know how to get funding and people who don't and will never know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it almost feels like there's a barrier to entry. And like, if you don't know how to get in to this group of people who get funding, you will never get in.
Oh, no, no, you're absolutely right. Like, I'm very thankful that I know some, you know, artists here who kind of like have advised me on a lot of stuff, but I can totally understand how you can really be in the dark when you don't know the right people. Mm. Or someone who can help you out. Like, the tax exemption form is a good example because there's so many people who don't realize it's there. Mm-hmm. And that they can apply for it and they think, oh, I don't apply for it. Like, I don't sort of like, they think that their work doesn't fit the criteria.
Yeah, that it doesn't qualify.
Yeah, and I actually just spoke to someone who's been an illustrator here for quite some years, Alan Dunn. I don't know if you know him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I know him through my friend Liam, actually, who would be very interested in the comic book scene, yeah.
That's brilliant. Yeah, he's been great. He's been giving me so much advice. Like, and he just told me, just apply. Yeah, just do this, this, this. And I was like, oh, okay. So I did and I got it. So like, that's been obviously, that was actually great getting that. And then since then, I've been telling all my friends, like, just apply for it. You need, it's just a bit of support and something you don't have to stress about.
Yeah, and that must take such a load off as well, because I know as a freelancer in any discipline, kind of worrying about this tax bill that you'll have hanging over you at the end of the year can be crippling.
Oh my god, yeah, it was definitely a fear.
Yeah. You touched on the topics that you cover in your work and how they're kind of more of interest in the States maybe than they are in Ireland. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so like my work, a lot of my work is about representation of Black people particularly, and I just find that sort of work is quite, I think there's a lot of big communities in America and a lot more sort of like maybe Black editors in like publishing or in different platforms. I know it's still very underrepresented there, but mm-hmm. I definitely think that's kind of like where I got my first work. It was just through Instagram. Someone just saw like a piece of work I had done and just said, oh yeah, I really like that style and obviously the topic and everything. So that's kind of how that happened. But yeah, most of my work has just been really about representation. I think it all kind of started from the book that I made back in uni, my Black Women in History book. I think that was kind of where I started sort of looking at things I was passionate about and things I was good at, which was drawing. And I thought, well, why don't I combine the two? And why don't I fill a gap here? Because I felt like when it particularly comes to representation, there wasn't much about women. And I didn't really know any sort of acknowledged Black women or women that had done some things in the past or in different sectors as well. So I wanted to do a book about it and I just got such positive response from it. I was actually really nervous. The first time I sold it on a market was actually in Dublin. It was the scene fair that they used to have. And I remember being really nervous about bringing this thing out back in 2015. And where no one was really talking about the movement, the, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, and people weren't really talking about, like, you know, Black representation and stuff that much. And I just remember being like, oh my god, are people going to think I'm like some, you know, really intense person and I'm trying to like make them uncomfortable? I don't know, you know, I just had a lot of fears, but everyone was like really, really positive about it. And we're just like, oh my god, I didn't know about these people. This is great. So, you know, I just felt like, wow, I just got to keep going. I just kind of keep, you know, bringing representation out there because it's helping people and it's educating people. And, you know, it's just something I wish I had when I was a kid growing up as well.
And it's also, I mean, it's such a gift in a way to be able to combine something that you're passionate about with something that you're talented at, you know, and that's, I think, something that's so special mm-hmm. with art. And like, if that's something that you can make your living from, it's kind of incredible.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Do you think, since 2015 even, do you think the level of representation has changed at all in Ireland? Like, do you see any improvement?
In Ireland, oof, I feel like maybe this is, yeah, in some ways there's definitely people talking more about issues that are happening here, particularly like direct provision and things like that. I definitely remember, like, back then, like, no one would even know what it was. And in recent years, there's been more sort of like activism going on, with obviously with the campaign for choice. And there was a lot of kind of highlights being done about direct provision then and how black women are suffering in those systems. And so I feel like there's definitely been an awakening, but it's been like a slow awakening. And then obviously recently with George Floyd's death, it's just kind of exploded. And it's like you're seeing all these people kind of like writing about Black Lives Matter and, you know, being interested in, and actually learning about stuff that's happening in their own country. Mm-hmm. And that's just been like overwhelming yeah. and intense. But also I'm seeing something positive come out of it, even if it's very, very long overdue.
Yeah. Is it difficult? I mean, I feel as though basically it must be difficult to be a person of colour and to see these conversations happening nonstop and kind of depictions of people of colour being harassed, being attacked. Like, is it something that's very draining? Or, I mean, obviously we're kind of glad that people are talking about it, but is it difficult to bear witness to that for you?
Yeah, that's definitely been a really difficult thing. Like, I remember when it just happened, I was just getting all these messages from people I hadn't talked to in like years, and it was a bit like, what, you know, oh, I'm here for you and if you need to talk, and you know, and I was just like, you were constantly being reminded of our suffering, you know, it's something that we're already very aware of, and it was kind of being put on big display and globally. It wasn't even just in one country anymore, it was sort of, it was tripling into every media around the world almost. And so it was a constant thing you couldn't escape. And as someone who is really aware of it and gets impacted by it a lot, like, a lot of black folks that I know were just like, take a break from the internet, like, you just need to look after yourself, look after your mental health, just do something, put some anime on, I don't know, you know, just take your mind off, because it was really, really draining. I would definitely say it sort of kind of feels a bit more naturalized now, normalized now, like, it's not as intense, but that first 2 weeks was just crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I also feel as if probably kind of naturally, but there was so much pressure being put on people of colour to talk about it and also to kind of utilise their own experiences as a form of grief porn, the kind of endless conversations of like, tell us when you were harassed in public.
Yeah.
That's really, really difficult, I think.
Yeah, that's actually a really big problem when it comes to the internet in general, because I feel like if you met a person in face to face, you probably wouldn't ask them these really insensitive questions. Mm-hmm. But I feel like on the internet, there's a big tendency of sort of putting your whole life on display.
Yeah.
And people almost expect it and they want to consume it. And it does become kind of like a consumption that's sort of unhealthy and I think people forget boundaries. So yeah, I definitely felt that there was a pressure. I need to say something. I need to speak about this.
Yeah.
And people are waiting to hear what I'm going to say. And that was really, that was too much pressure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a massive pressure to put on one person to kind of commodify their own experiences for a cause that in essence isn't their fault, you know,
yeah.
isn't your work to do, but then becomes your work.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's true. And another aspect that was difficult was that all of a sudden there was all these opportunities, you know, flooding our way. And I was getting so many emails being like, hey, do you want to be involved in this and this? But there was no time to kind of grieve. There was no time to sort of like, you know, sort of reflect what's happened and like just giving yourself space, because you felt like, oh, I have to take these opportunities. Maybe it's going to blow over and then no one is going to hire you. So that was like another kind of pressure that was happening. I just wanted to put that out
there.
Yeah,
of course, because you kind of get that, like, you know, I'm advocating for more representation of people of color in these different spheres. So when someone comes and asks you to do it, of course you want to say yes, but then you're also going, this is a really stressful time.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
God, it's all very complicated. So how did the front cover for the Irish Times, which was out, I think, last weekend, is an incredible piece of work. How did that come about?
Yeah, that was, God, I wonder how Rachel Collins got my contact details. I'm not sure, but I just remember seeing an email from her come in saying, oh, you know, they really like my work. They would really like me to do this cover. And they mentioned, obviously, the people who were going to be part of it. And I just thought, oh, my God, this is really exciting. I've never seen this in Ireland. And this is a big, you know, thing. It's almost like history to me. And it's just, you know, because it's the biggest news paper as well. And so to imagine having a feature literally centering on Black Irish people and, you know, what exactly are they going through here was just incredible. It was really amazing to be part of it. Very emotional as well. So yeah, that was just, you know, it was a very short deadline. It was very, like, I think like a week before it was supposed to launch, and I was like, oh my God, and I was juggling so many deadlines already, but I just couldn't say no.
Yeah, of course. And what has the feedback been like on that?
Oh wow, it's just been immense. I just remember the moment it was put out there, just seeing all the people like tagging me in and, you know, just, you know, saying it's an incredible feature and that the cover is amazing. And it was just really, it just felt like, oh wow, I've done something good, I've put something good out there. And also just like Black people living in Ireland seeing themselves, it's just, you know, it was a big deal for them. And I did remember seeing some messages from them being like, oh, I feel really emotional about this. And then I felt the emotional teared up because I just know how important that must have been, that moment for them. I think that particularly because I come from a very similar sized population in Denmark with a very, very little representation as well. And, you know, you live among just majority white people and you just never seen like a big national paper write about your experiences. It's just, yeah, it's just incredible.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess it's been really interesting to watch in a way, kind of, because I used to work in Irish media, now I'm slightly removed from it, obviously geographically and kind of work-wise. But it was really great to me to see how positively received it was and how many people talked about it. Because I feel like in Ireland, where we kind of have a tendency to talk about the things we're annoyed about.
Yeah, yeah.
More than to celebrate the wins. And I thought this was such a great win and there was so much noise about it. It was just really, really wonderful to see, and very different, I think, to kind of 10 years ago when I worked in Irish magazines and Irish newspapers. I think it would have been slightly different.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Even then, any stories about Black Irish people, like you said, were about direct provision or they were about immigration. There was very little coverage of Black Irish people living their lives as Black Irish people in Ireland, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. No, completely. That's another thing. It was just, I remember them being very sort of keen on like having something that felt very hopeful. And, you know, something that was very positive for the cover. And I think that, I hope it translated that as that. Because I wanted something that felt very, like, looking towards the future, you know, something, like, positive. And I think all the sort of issues and things that were covered, and also just, like, you know, the celebration of, like, achievements of Black Irish people. And that was just, it was just great to see that. Really, really great.
Yeah, it made a really nice difference to, I think, a lot of kind of grief porn that the media can tend towards. Like it was a really nice, meaningful and positive, as you said, piece. Tell me about What We Don't Talk About, That's your graphic novel that is out this year soon?
Yeah, it's been kind of pushed a lot, just with the whole COVID and stuff. But it's finally been printed and it's finally been shipped. And I believe it's been shipped this month. And it's going to be in the stores officially in August in Europe. And that's also here. And I think in September in the States. So, yeah, I'm really, really excited about that. Just to tell you a little bit about the story. So it's about an interracial couple, and they're called Fi and Adam. They've been together for about 2 years, but she's never met his parents. And they're finally set out to go on a trip to meet his parents. And during the trip, a lot of sort of uncomfortable stuff sort of comes up. And she realises that his parents are not the most tolerant people. There's a lot of kind of subtle racism that happens. And whenever she tries to address it with Adam, he kind of tries to sort of avoid the conversation because it's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't really want to address it. And so it kind of, it's a story about them sort of struggling, discussing these things and sort of being honest with each other. And she kind of starts to wonder, you know, if she can be with this person who's not willing to kind of, to sort of accept that she's different, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, she... being with a black person is like, you know, it's not just like, you can't just ignore the colour, you know, you can't ignore that they have different life experiences and that they're going to be perceived differently. And so it's kind of a story about that sort of internal kind of struggle in their relationship.
Yeah, it kind of is reminding me of, I mean, not the entire plot, I think, but the opening scenes of Jordan Peele's Get Out. When
I still need to see that. I'm the worst. But yeah, I need to watch that.
It's a really fascinating film, but kind of like that, in the opening scenes, there's a black guy and his white girlfriend, and they're talking about going to meet her parents, and he kind of goes like, have you told them that I'm black? And she's very casual and kind of dismissive, going, of course I have, like, it's not a big deal. Whereas he's obviously mm-hmm. going, my lived experience is that it might be a big deal.
Yeah. That's a really good point.
And I think as white people, we often, because we assume, like, I assume that I'm not racist. And so if somebody says something about black people, I almost have to stop and think, okay, their experience might not be the way I think about it. You know, that I'm going, like, of course, this is the way it should be, without actually stopping to go, oh, no, that's not how you experience life. That like, you walk through life differently to me because you're kind of forced to.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, I think it's a very kind of, it's very, like, done so subconsciously, you know. I mean, it was very important for me to not paint Adam as, like, an evil character, because I think often when we see stories like this, we see them as very black and white. Oh, there's the bad guy and there's the good person. And in a lot of interracial relationship films that I have watched, it's like them against their parents, and it's like they cut their parents off and then they're badly in love and everything's fine. And it's like, it's not like that at all. It's so much more complicated. I mean, I suppose I'm a product of an interracial relationship. My parents, like, my dad is white and my mom is black, and I grew up seeing a lot of this subtle racism, sometimes quite obvious, from my grandmother, and seeing how, like, sometimes my dad would just stay quiet because he didn't want to confront it. And that was very uncomfortable as a child. You're confused because it's like a reflection on you as well. And
of course, and
I just, like, seeing how it was impacting my mom, and it kind of also shaped the way I looked at myself. So I sort of, like, I know how difficult it is. Like, you know, you love your parents and you don't want to make them upset. So that's why a lot of times people just pretend, or they'll just say, oh, they're just old, you know, they're just, you know, they just don't want to confront it because it is uncomfortable. It might mean that you're potentially causing a disruption in your relationship. And so I wanted to talk about how it was difficult. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I also think that kind of state of being in the blurred lines between racism and something that doesn't exist, like racial neutrality, or that doesn't exist for white people anyway, that's much more realistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? To be talking about the kind of insidious ways in which racism creeps into our lives, because it's really easy to denounce somebody who is in the Ku Klux Klan or who is filmed on Facebook, you know, throwing racial slurs at someone else.
Absolutely.
But it's more complicated and more realistic and more everyday, I think, you know, the conversations that we're not really having.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's it, really. Yeah.
Well, Charlotte, thank you so much for taking the time to chat to me after our initial technical difficulties.
Oh, it happens, it happens. I'm happy we were able to do it, because this was a really nice conversation. I really enjoyed it.
Me too. Oh, thank you. And tell me, how can people either get in touch with you or follow your work or support you?
Oh, yeah. So I think the easiest way, like, I'm on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, and my username on all those platforms is @ZOLWIA. It's actually pronounced as Shuvia. Most people say Salvia. And yeah, so that's how most people can find me. And I also have a website on the charlottechristensen.com. And an art shop as well called the orangenestshop.com.
Okay, wonderful. And I will share all of those links in the show notes. Thank you all for listening to How to Be Sound. I know I've been away for a while and I really appreciate you hanging around. If you would like to support me and the work that I do, you can pledge $4 a month at patreon.com/RosemaryMcCabe. That's Rosemary McCabe with an A in my Mac. And you'll get 3 or maybe 4 essays a week, 3 minimum. How to Be Sound is produced by Liam Garrity, whose own podcast, Meet Your Maker, you can listen to anywhere you get podcasts, and you can check out the website meetyourmaker.ie. His latest episode features the true story of how Don Bluth ended up leaving Disney to open a animation studio in Dublin, where All Dogs Go to Heaven was made, the film that made me bawl my head off, and I had to be escorted from the Swan Cinema in Rathmines. The Stella, the original Stellogs, that's how old I am. Thank you all for listening, and I will catch you all next time.
How to Be Sound is part of The Warren, the home of great Irish podcasts, as is my podcast, Science Drops. You can find more great shows at thewarren.ie.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.